I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. Deadly storms are ravaging the nation this weekend from the northeast to the west coast. At least 10 people are dead and authorities are warning of dangerous travel conditions. CBS's Stacy Lynn.
That includes people in Southern California who've been trapped for days due to rare snowstorms there. And Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren tells us it is not over yet for them.
Another winter storm moving into the west coast, and with this also, again, in the mountains, feet of snow.
Meantime, almost a million people are without power in parts of the South and Midwest because of severe storm systems there. Stacy Lynn, CBS News.
That winter storm warning means bad weather in New England. WBZ-TV meteorologist Lexi O'Connor.
Several towns picking up several inches of snow, and it's a heavy, wet snow, so you want to be careful shoveling it. The most is the farther north you are. New Ipswich, New Hampshire, picking up 6.5 inches. Shirley, 4.5. Same with Pepperell. Clinton, 3 inches. Lexington, also 3 inches.
Back in Washington, President Biden had a cancerous lesion removed during a routine physical. CBS's Christina Ruffini.
In a memo released late yesterday, the president's doctor said a lesion removed from Mr. Biden's chest during an exam last month tested positive for basal cell carcinoma, a type of skin cancer, adding that all cancerous tissue was successfully removed and that no further treatment is required.
In Itley, Texas, 3 young children are dead. KTVT-TV's Nicole Nielsen.
A heartbreaking scene in Itley.
They're extremely sad to have to report on this.
Inside a home on the 300 block of Harris Street near Stafford Elementary School, police arrived around 4 o'clock to find 3 children stabbed to death. 2 other children inside were wounded and taken to nearby hospitals.
The U.S. has pledged another $400 million in military assistance to Ukraine. This is Russian forces may be on the verge of their first victory in months. CBS's MTS Taieb reports.
The Kremlin sees the city as a gateway to capturing the rest of the Donbass region. And some estimates suggest tens of thousands of Russian soldiers have been killed trying to secure it. While Ukraine insists Bakhmut has little strategic value, its military leaders also concede defending the city has resulted in huge losses.
The 2023 Iditarod race kicks off with a ceremonial start in Anchorage with 33 mushers and dozens of sled dogs competing. The race is a 1,000-mile trek to Nome. It is the smallest group of teams in the history of the race. Some sponsors have pulled out. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripes Cast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, folks, how we doing? We got a special episode of the Cripes Cast this week where I'm talking to a bunch of different bands that were at Joey Song in Madison. Now, Joey Song is a benefit concert I was performing at recently. It raises a bunch of money for childhood epilepsy. And at this year's benefit, I had sort of my green room, and I just kind of had a rotating door of musicians and artists that were coming through, talking about the benefit, talking about their careers. So today, you know, it's kind of a bit of a compilation. I've got five different interviews blended into this episode. Think of today's episode like a seven-layer dip, okay? You know, you're like, huh, I didn't know you could put that in there, but pretty good. So anyways, here's the lineup of the guests I got. First, I'm talking with the creator of Joey Song, Mike Gamal. Then I got to talk to John and Eric and Kyle from Portugal the Man. And after that, I chat with Dave Perner of Soul Asylum, Chris Collinwood of Fountains of Wayne, and Miles Nielsen, the lead singer of Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts. It's a jam-packed episode, folks. So, was that a pun, Charlie? Jam? Real good. Anyways, let's get into it. First up is the creator of Joey Song, Mike Gamal. Now, Mike's son Joe was the inspiration for the benefit, and Mike gets into how Joey Song has evolved over the years and his plans for where he wants to take it. Instead of me rambling on with more, here is my conversation with Mike. I know you've done this a million times.
A million times.
Walk us through the inspiration behind Joey's song.
Sure, man. So my son Joe had epilepsy. First had his first seizure when he was about 6 months old. And and unfortunately, the epilepsy that Joe was diagnosed with was a really heinous form of it called Dravet syndrome. So Joe's prognosis was not very good. And we lost Joe just short of his fifth birthday. And even when Joe was still alive, I had thought about trying to do something to help other people because I knew his prognosis wasn't good, but you know, we're Wisconsin folks. You try to help your neighbor, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what you do. That's what we're taught to do. So I had thought about it. And back millions of years ago, I worked at a club in Madison called Headliners in Church Key, which was a big music venue back in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I had some connection. And one of those connections was Butch Vig, who was kicking around in Spooner at the time. But we originally started with doing CDs. But if you'll recall, about 2010, which is when Joe died, is when the world decided to stop buying CDs and only stream. So, but we would always hold a CD release party, and it turned into this live event that we have today. But it basically was, I lost my son to epilepsy. At the time, there was no real treatments for the kind that he had, and I found out afterwards there's lots of other kids. Some pediatric epilepsies are just untreatable. They call them intractable epilepsies.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to do something, right? I needed to turn the crap that we went through and try to prevent other families from going through it. And that's behind it. And then Butch and I hooked up and it's turned into this thing that it is now.
Super cool. It's at Sylvie this year. Yep. There's a ton of great acts. And,
awesome.
And you guys do such an amazing job, you know, with all the artists you bring in. Just, I mean, we had such a great meal last night,
great.
You know, and, but it's such a cool vibe. And, you know, this, epilepsy, obviously, it's one of those things that people may know of, but it's not like, you know, breast cancer. And it's kind of interesting how these, you know, the story you tell around a disease can oftentimes make or break how long that disease is going to be around and how bad it's going to be. So, I mean, it's so cool that you've developed this story around Joey's song and what you've done. I mean, this whole concert, in my mind, is like storytelling.
Yeah, it is.
And people are, you know, ready to give money. And so, I mean, props to you. That's amazing.
Thanks, man. You know, it's interesting that you say that about epilepsy is so misunderstood, right? Mm-hmm. Because many disabilities you can see, right? If somebody's crippled or any of the other things that they can be, you recognize that. But epilepsy, you can't tell somebody has epilepsy by looking at them. Mm-hmm. And then how it manifests itself, you know, seizures, if anybody's ever seen a seizure, they're scary, right? Yeah. And they manifest themselves in a bunch of different ways. So there's always been a stigma attached to epilepsy, which most people that have it prefer not to talk about, you know, that's they don't talk about it. And then the other part of it is epilepsy is like some diseases, like a spectrum disease.
Right.
You know, there's tons of different causes and there's tons of different ways it manifests itself. Whether
right.
it's, you know, the shaking that people think of. Some people have what they call absent seizures and they just stare. There's a lot of kids in school that are really having seizures, but the teacher thinks, you know, little Billy's spacing out over there.
Mm.
So it's kind of a hidden ailment as well, which is why doing what we do, I think, is important. And not to sprain my elbow patting myself on the back, but by having folks like you and Garbage and Soul Asylum and Portugal the Man and Fountains Away and Play Our Thing, I get a lot of people in the door because they want to see the acts, don't know about it, and they're going to get an education tonight. Right. As you've seen walking around the venue, we got signs explaining epilepsy. There's going to be one of the doctors that receives our research grant is going to come and talk for a little bit. So if you want to see Charlie Behrens do his comedy or watch Butch Vig play drums or watch the Nielsen Trust play Cheap Trick songs, we're going to make you learn a little bit about epilepsy as well. So it's kind of sneaky.
Yeah, well, you know, it's fishing. Do you think the walleye likes the hook, or does he like the leech on the hook?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
or she. You know?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Or if you're using crankbaits, you know, I mean,
but that's
way.
A spectrum as well, right?
Exactly. And you're a Midwest guy through and through.
Yep.
And the music biz, you were in Madison during such a cool time.
Oh, man.
I mean, what was that like?
Madison used to, it's vibrant now, but back in the 80s, we had so many clubs. I worked at Headliners, but we had Merlin's and we had OK's Corral and we had all these clubs. And there were bands like Spooner, which Butch and Duke came out of. You know, and we had just this rich pool. Ben Sidran was kicking around. The Cheap Trick guys were playing, you know, dates around here. And then the whole Midwest scene, right? You had the Replacements up in Minnesota. You had Soul Asylum.
Yeah.
The Midwest music scene back in the 80s, of course, we didn't know it at the time because we were living it. It was just the scene. But it's such a, you look back on it now and go, man, that was a rich vein we were mining at that time. It was great. And drinking age was 20 or 18 in those
days
too.
Yeah, that helps.
It changed when I just got out of college. So I was grandfathered in the being able to legally drink at 18.
Yeah. No, it is kind of cool though, you know, because a lot of people, when they think of music, they think LA, they think New York, they think Chicago, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, to see sort of these Midwest, like these sort of sleeper Midwest hubs, Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, you know, Cleveland,
yep.
great music comes out of them, and sometimes you don't know it while it's happening. So
that's right. It's got a very salt of the earth feel to it. You know, if we would sit down and draw a chart of, you know, all these bands, there's a common thread that it's, you know, it's usually not big hair, it's usually not lots of effects, you know.
Yeah.
It's usually guitar. And you know, probably in those days, the most wild songs we had was like Head East, Never Been Any Reason, and REO Riding the Storm Out with that. You know, otherwise,
yeah,
it's two guitars, you know, it's verse, chorus, verse, and get out kind of stuff. And that's just, it fits the Midwest ethos, I think.
Yeah, really?
I really think it does.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's super cool. And what do you think the dream is with Joey's song? When are you going to be satisfied?
Well, I won't be satisfied until kids don't have to go through what Joe went through. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. But there'll be incremental steps along the way because, and we could use all the time you have on this, the medications, even though medications have made great advancements in the sense for treatment, it's always been 1 in 3 people can't find relief from medication or surgery. And that number hasn't changed even with the advancements in medication. What has helped is that the side effects have decreased, but still, 1 out of every 3 people that has epilepsy doesn't know from minute to minute whether they're going to have a seizure or end up in the back of an ambulance, right?
Yeah.
So that sword of Damocles is hanging over their head 24/7, and that was the case with Joe. So my mid-range step is going to be getting that 1 in 3 number to 1 in 4, 1 in 5,
yeah,
1 in 6, so that lives can be better. But the ultimate goal is that nobody has to worry about this anymore, that we can figure out how to make sure that people can live normal lives with many of the causes of epilepsy. So that's the most important one. But I will tell you, the other thing is, my other goal is, you know, we've got so many cool people here that know lots of other people. So I've enjoyed every venue we're at, But there's a big football stadium here in Madison.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, and there's a few of those things. And someday, that might be my goal, too, that we do this little song and dance show that we do, and we get, you know, 60,000 people instead of... Not that I'm not pleased with 2,500 people. Believe me, I'm over the moon. But yeah. You ask about, you know, long-term goal. So I don't think even though they would hold more people, I don't think I could ever have it at the big house in Michigan just because.
You know, I mean, you got to have your standards.
Well, we know what Ann Arbor is, right? She's a what, right? So, right. So you know, that's part of it as well.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you
very
much.
Thank you for coming, amigo. And
absolutely.
Thank you for putting us on the map. Thank you for letting me tell my story to everybody, too, man.
Oh, my gosh. I appreciate you including me. This is super cool, man. Thank you.
You bet.
Special thanks to Mike for including me in Joey's Song this year. And for more information about the event, head to joeysong.org and hope to see you there next year. For my next interview, I got to sit down with the band that also shared my dressing room for the benefit, Portugal the Man. We talked about similarities and differences between Alaska and the Midwest. And of course, Summerfest, which is the greatest music festival of all time, if you're asking me. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Here's my interview with Portugal the Man.
You've been in Madison now a little bit, and you've been here before, Wisconsin, you know.
Sure.
Top three differences between Alaska and Wisconsin.
Well, it's interesting. The part of Alaska that we're from has a lot of folks that were originally from this neck of the woods.
Isn't that funny?
It was a FDR New Deal, Great Depression deal.
Really?
So a lot of Minnesugans and Wisconsinites came. Is that the demonym?
Minnesugans?
It's a lot of like farmland and long sunny summer nights and, you know, potatoes and a lot of lakes. So I think it was like there's lots of land up there. I know you farm folks have had a hard time. It's the 1920s.
Yeah.
Steinbeck's all their age.
Yeah. Right.
Go up to Alaska.
Stuff. Yeah. And then Alaska also has got plenty of hunting and fishing.
I didn't answer your question. We're talking about the similarities, but you asked what the differences are.
Well, you know what, though? It's funny you bring up the similarities because I do think Alaska should be, and I've said this on a different podcast, but an honorary member of the Midwest. But should the Midwest be an honorary part of Alaska?
We're all part of Canada.
Okay.
We're West Canada, you're South Canada, it's all Canada.
I suppose that's the case.
Just let them have it.
How does Alaska and the place you were born and come up influence the music?
Entirely. Yeah. We still, the Alaskans in this band go to Alaska with any excuse at the drop of a hat. I think we have to. I think if I don't go to Alaska at least a couple times a year, I get weird.
Yeah.
Because it's a very different place, and there's a lot of different Alaskas within Alaska.
Right.
As there are in Wisconsin, I'm sure.
Sure.
Right?
I've been to Sitka, you know.
Okay.
And I'm sure that there's an assumption as soon as I said that, like, oh, this guy. If you say Sitka, what does that mean? That's kind
of
like...
That's southeast. That's one of those parts of Alaska that you can't drive to. And that's a very specific, kind of different part of Alaska. We have a lot of friends out there. Shout out to Nicholas Glannon. Shout out to Lakota Harden. There's a lot of very cool people in Sitka. But no, like that's just a perfect example. Like we were born and raised in Alaska, and I never made it to Sitka because I couldn't. I didn't have a boat or an airplane. So we were beholden to the roads.
Yeah.
But there's parts of Alaska that I'm sure a lot of our buddies in Sitka haven't been to, or maybe they have. I don't know.
There's just so much Alaska. There is so much Alaska. But I guess, like, what are the things that that kind of the place you're from kind of brings into the music?
We're just, like, surrounded by mountains. And we grew up with wildlife that you never take for granted. Like, when we were coming up, waiting for the school bus, there'd be moose around just snacking on trees. And that's just normal. That's just something that, you know, is happening.
Yeah.
You don't get that in a lot of places. You don't get that in a Target parking lot.
Right.
Outside of Alaska. It's just, it's wild. And, you know, everything's just bigger, more wild. What do you got? Oh, he's reaching.
Oh, he's got some.
Wait, do you guys have moose down here? You do?
No, we don't. Right? Well, no. No?
No?
Well, no. We have deer.
Deer.
Yeah.
Are they aggressive?
Well, deer, you know, deer will frick up your Corolla. I'll tell you that right now. On yeah. purpose, though. On purpose. They'll run out in the middle of the road and just, and then they'll just do that to mess with you to watch you swerve. Now, if you see a moose in the road, much different than if you see a deer. You're going full bore toward a moose. What do you do?
Go faster.
go faster. You're trying to go under it.
No, seriously, what do you do, though? Because if it's a deer, you just hit it.
A moose totaled my dad's truck and went through the window. They will probably survive the wreck, and you probably will not.
Yeah, so you have to swerve for a moose.
I was always brought up, and maybe this is just my family's philosophy, but they're like, do not swerve, never swerve, hit the brakes, try and stop. But if you swerve, there's always ice on the roads, and you're better to die by moose than die of a rollover accident.
I suppose.
On some godforsaken highway in the middle of nowhere.
Go out with some honor.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah. Die like
speed into that sucker. Yeah. No, in Wisconsin, though, they say don't even slow down, because if you slow down, the car goes down and then the antlers go right into your face.
There is, there is a philosophy in going under.
Okay.
Yes. You know, I was being serious.
Really?
Yeah. You do not try to stop. I mean, you definitely don't swerve. I mean, that's the thing that we're taught growing up in Alaska. I don't know if it's the icy roads or whatever it is, but yeah, I mean, that's our experience with moose. I mean, we had one moose crush our van.
Really?
And it just came right in. My mom had tried to slow down, so we just kind of hit it, and it went in. The other time I had a moose, we were going fast enough that it flew over us. So that's plan of attack every time, is go under it.
All right, wait, when you hit it and the moose was donezo, was the moose done, you said?
No. Oh, sadly. I mean, they're so big, man.
They just get hurt.
Sometimes they'll just run off.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be pretty messed up and they're out.
All right. If you do see a fresh one on the side of the road, you guys, you know.
Subsistence, baby.
Yeah. All right.
It's a thing. We don't, but some do.
Some do. Is that frowned upon? Because here, if you see a deer, it's frowned upon to leave it.
I mean, there's a bureaucratic process to get the subsistence permit and to take that kill. And people do. You know, 1,000 pounds of food.
That's a year and more than a year.
Yeah.
You know, do it upright.
Well, what a bleak conversation.
We went straight to, you know, moose and deer deaths, you know, but it's one of them things.
I got an F-150 in the Northwest now, and, you know, they just turn into a fine red mist, the deer.
Yeah. I know. Pew. Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Rest in pieces. What brings you guys to Joey Sung? Who got you into it? Who told you about it? What inspired you to come?
I mean, there's a few different avenues. We're old buddies with Butch Vig, and just meeting Mike and doing Summerfest in Milwaukee this last summer.
Summerfest is great.
That was the first time that we really kind of made a reality of it. And, you know, Mike was so pumped just talking about, like, you know, his connection with Dax and the Cheap Trick and the Nielsen Family Trust and, you know, Fountains of Wayne. And we just kind of started talking about music. And then before I knew, you know, any of Joey's story or any of the back history to it, he had me sold on, you know, the people that were going to be involved. And now that we kind of got into it and we get the personal connection with epilepsy, you know, John's daughter, struggles with epilepsy and something that they caught early, but it's definitely a huge part of their life. And it's something that I think probably affects more families than I ever realized, but it's not something that I hear a lot of people talk about or you know, play in support of or know much about. So like anything else, if we're doing something, I think it's usually because there's a connection or we want to know more about it.
Yeah, super cool. You talked about Summerfest in Milwaukee. You know, it's where I'm from. Summerfest is everything, you know?
Yeah.
And we think it's a pretty cool festival. But, you know, you see a ton of festivals. So how do you rank Summerfest in terms of all the other festivals?
Very cool festival you guys got over there. I was one of the wildest crowds I've ever seen at a festival. Loose.
Yeah.
Wild, loud, ready to go. And we played late, too.
Did you?
Yeah, things were crunchy and ready to go, man.
That's awesome.
It's great. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's fun. You got the lake breeze coming off. You know?
We had kind of rehearsed, you know, we went back into our practice space and we woodshed and kind of wrote a different set that we were excited to try out for that summer. And, you know, some other material and some kind of like down tempo stuff. And then we saw the crowd at Summerfest and we're like, nope,
yeah,
we gotta come out and play the heaviest rock and roll set that we can do. And I mean, that's just the vibe.
That's funny. I do that a lot comedy-wise. Like, if you're going, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to do. And that, like, tonight, I don't know exactly what bit I'm going to do at all. But
I think we're good at not being good at preparing.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing. Like, we try and remain as context-sensitive to the situation as we can. And even coming to this thing, we knew we had 20 minutes, but then we started doing rehearsals yesterday and everybody else was doing wild covers and, like, you know, just like legacy sort of Jack FM style cover tunes. And we're like, oh, shoot. Hope.
Everyone's doing well, fun. Well positioned hope there. I like hope. That.
Let me just scooch on by and write some covers really quick. And so we're going to do a little blend. We're going to do a half and half thing, but we didn't know what we were going to do until we got here.
Yeah. I like that. It puts you in a different mindset, too. Can you
do that in, like, comedy?
And yeah, you definitely go in and you can suss out pretty quick, and then you change it around, you know. You kind of have a running set list in your mind with comedy, you know.
I have no idea how comedy works.
It's just like music, but a lot easier, I think, you know.
I would say the opposite.
Would you? Well, as someone who's a subpar musician, I'll say the opposite, and then use it. That's very Midwest of you, too, you know.
Just good. A contrarian in the corner. You're not even on camera right now.
What? Oh, geez, Louise.
I don't want to be on camera.
Okay, fine. No, you're not.
Yeah, he's over there. Are.
Yeah.
Well, don't try and be funny. Just be yourself.
Just be yourself. Yeah, that's good advice. That's really nice. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate you. It'll be fun seeing you out there. Huge thanks to Portugal the Man for joining us on the Cripescast and giving tips on how to avoid a car crash with a moose. Make sure you listen to give that another listen before you go to Alaska, folks. And check them out, PortugalTheMan.com and at Portugal the Man on all social. Be sure to download their music and buy their albums as well. My next interview is with the lead singer of Soul Asylum and Minneapolis's own Dave Perner. Now, he was born in Green Bay, okay, but he grew up in Minneapolis. Dave says that even with all his time away from the Midwest, he still loves to come back. And, you know, I tell you that, folks, doesn't that just hit you right in that brat soak ticker? I tell you what. Jeez Louise. Anyway, he and I kind of shoot the breeze. And, you know, Dave's got some jokes. I'll tell you that. He's got some jokes. So take a listen.
Yeah, Am I supposed to talk into
that microphone or no?
Is this for my voice?
That's for your voice. Sounds really nice in there.
Oh, yeah, I sound good?
Yeah, you got it, yeah. Has anyone ever told you had a good voice? You know?
No, not that I remember.
Well, you got a good voice.
My folks just said, whatever you do, don't go into music.
Did they? Were they supportive of it?
No.
No?
Well, they're probably right. They're like, getting into music is going to be hell.
Has it been hell? Has that been accurate?
Well, let's just say I would make it terrible just about anything else. Anything else I would do worse. I'm sure they wanted me to, you know, be a dentist or something. But did you know dentists have a higher suicide rate than singers in rock bands?
Gee, and that's why it's a good thing. I'm also going to say, if you were my freaking dentist, if you were looking at me, you know, I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to deal with
the
cavity.
They cause a lot of pain, and I cause a lot of pain.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I could see that. Did someone shut the door? Oh, look
it's
at that.
It's been said that sometimes my songs make people cry because it's that bad.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. Now you're just doing the Minnesota thing, you know?
Is that the Minnesota thing?
I don't know. I'm just you know, throwing... Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the Milwaukee thing?
Well, it's the same thing. It's, you're, you know, you're putting yourself down, you know, a little bit, set the bar low, walk right over it.
Can you imagine how, like, easy stand-up comedy must be?
Seriously, think about it.
I like it when people hate me, but it's usually because of the other guys in the band. That's the way I rationalize it.
No, that's a good way to do it. Yeah. It's their problem.
But I have actually often said to myself or anybody that might be listening to me that stand-up comedy is the only thing that scares me more than standing up there with a guitar, because you ain't got the guitar.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that is true. But you know what? Standing up there with a guitar scares me more than stand-up comedy, because I am a slightly below average guitar player.
I'm not really down with the whole crossover thing.
Okay. All right.
I don't
I won't
like
tell
it.
You about my second album coming out.
I don't like comedy music.
Yeah, well, it's not...
Like, there's a couple good Cheech and Chong jams.
Yeah, there's some good ones. You can't say you just don't like any of it,
King
can
Tut
you?
Was okay. It was okay, pretty good.
So now you're just listing off good ones now.
You know, because the rest of it's kind of...
there's a lot of not-so-great stuff. Yeah, it's like it didn't quite do... It's tough. It's tough to write a punchline in a song and
like
have it...
like how Dimitri Martin...
Yeah, Dimitri Martin.
Doesn't he uses the guitar in a... in a pretty good way.
What about Bo Burnham? You like him at all?
I have some friends that are crazy about him, and I can't really understand it.
Okay.
It's too Broadway for me or something.
Yeah, it's very theatrical.
Yeah.
You don't like Broadway?
Well, I guess it depends on what it
is. I suppose. It's like you don't like movies?
You know, Fosse kind of thing, and there's just that. Bad thing. It's a little over the top for me a lot of the time. Musicals, yeah, particularly. But, you know, I love Broadway, actually. I love seeing this, about half the things that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's like any other art form, just like musical comedy.
Yeah, I shouldn't go to musical Broadway shows. I did see Bring the Noise, Bring the Funk.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
Tap dancing, and it was unbelievable. It was great. It was really, really good. Savion Glover, he's like the best tap dancer in my knowledge of tap dancing.
Wow, yeah.
So they do this kind of hip-hop tap thing, and it's great.
That's great. I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's worth it.
What role do you think where you came from influences your music? Like Minneapolis, right? Or was it out on the outskirts, or was it Minneapolis proper?
Well, you kind of, the royal you.
Yeah.
you grow up and you think it comes out of a radio from way far away. And that's always, I listened to, I was that kid that, there was a song playing on the radio in the car, I would go, Mom, I'm just going to sit here until the song is over. And she'd leave me in the car to listen until it ended, and then I could get out of the car.
Oh, wow.
I got to follow Joel Hodgson. How do you like that?
I mean, that's, yeah.
Oh, not that funny.
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything you're going
to
say funny right after that?
Upstaged by a stand-up comedian. Well, no, but I tell a lot of jokes in my set. I turn around, I look at the band, and I'm like, oh, that guy's tuning, or that guy's fixing his snare drum. I'm on. I tell a minute or two joke.
I will say... that's a huge art form right there. You know, the jokes between the tuning
jokes.
What's
going to fit this time space?
Right. Because you have to know.
Then I say something like, yeah, I was out in front of the venue today and it was a drug dealer. He sold me a pair of shoes. I don't know what they were laced with, but I've been tripping all day.
Okay. Do you write that?
No, I'm a cover. Yeah. Cover comedian, pretty much.
That's great.
Like the oral history, if you will.
Yeah.
I can tell you the logic joke. I can tell you the moth joke.
Moth joke's good. It's a great one.
And I believe that those are passed down. Like I was watching the new Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's good actually good. It's by Guillermo del Toro. You know that guy?
Yeah.
It's pretty good, and it sticks more to the pre-Disney interpretation. So I started going, who wrote this story? And it's unknown. So I don't know. It's
really? The origin of Pinocchio is unknown?
Mm-hmm. Just like jokes.
Wow. I'm going to Google that, by the way.
I'm pretty sure Norm did not make up the moth joke.
Oh, there was a story about the moth joke or
something.
You
ever heard Super Dave Osborne tell a joke? He's a catalog of jokes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's great. He's great.
I'll have to check that out. I honestly do think, and I nobody quote me on this because I could Google it, but it's probably a waste of time. I think Norm heard the moth joke or a different joke like that from his taxi driver.
That's how he tells the joke.
Oh, that's how he tells it?
Yeah. Oh. Because I got a joke. I was riding over here.
Oh, yeah.
My
that's
driver
why.
Told me, and it's Conan or whoever, and he goes, where do you get this material? And he goes, well, my driver told me the joke. But whenever he's on his thing on his show, people always go, who wrote these? And he goes, I don't know.
Yeah, he's a guy who sets the bar low all the time and then walks over it.
That's my man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling my usual jokes in England, And I would hear this, like, sort of, in the crowd. And if enough people do it, I kind of like it.
You like bombing. That's a very Norm MacDonald thing right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's terrible. And I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah. You know? That's an art form right there. I feel like, you know, you're not much for comedians crossing over to the music side, but I think, you know, you could cross over to the comedy side. I'm in favor of that. Yeah. Hey, you're a Midwest guy. Do you consider yourself kind of a Midwest guy? You know, is that kind of...
Yeah, I lived in New Orleans for 20 years, but it's good to be back in the Midwest. Yeah, I can't help it.
What is it about Minneapolis? I feel like the music... there's been so much amazing music that's come out of that city. What do you think it is about that city? That
long, long winters.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can figure.
Yeah.
You're just shut in. I think that's why we handled COVID better than most places, because we're used to being shut in.
Yeah. It's like, it's just a big, long February.
Yeah, you got to do something. Might as well start a band.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. How old were you when you first started playing?
17, I think.
17?
Yeah, I started out on the trumpet, then I moved to saxophone, and then I moved to guitar in high school.
Who was the first guy you looked at, or gal, whoever, and you were like, I want to do that?
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. I was a huge
fan. I was like, I want to do that, but I can't. And then I heard the Ramones, and I went, I think maybe I could do that.
Yeah. That's cool. What is your favorite Hendrix song?
Off the top of my head right now, I'm feeling Crosstown Traffic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kazoo on that track.
Isn't that crazy? What's that one? And I think where it starts off kind of like it's in a bar. You've kind of got that bar sound in it, the Hendrix song. I can't think of it. God, this is the worst, Charlie. Remember
All Along the Watchtower?
No, it's not All Along the Watchtower. It's in a tone.
I gotta go check this out. I think Miles is singing with his wife.
Oh, this was fun.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, this was it. Is that how we wrap interviews? Like, I start trying to think of a Hendrix song. You're like, I gotta think of an excuse here.
No, I tell you another joke.
Oh, okay. Oh, do you want it? Tell it to me.
Well, I don't know. Let me see. You know, I'm trying to size you up.
Yeah.
See what kind of a joke you might like.
6'1", 195.
This bear walks into a bar.
Okay.
And he goes, I'll have a gin and tonic. Bartender says, what's with the long pause? And the bear says, well, I've had these my whole life.
Dun-dun, dun-dun. Oh, bringing it full circle. Thank you very much. That was super cool.
See, I told you Dave had jokes.
It's more fun than drinking in a cornfield, folks. The Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Pour me another one, would you, or no?
CBS News Brief. At least 10 people have died so far in the severe weather sweeping the nation, bringing heavy, wet snow to New England. From our affiliate WWJN Report, DTE Energy President Trevor Lauer says some 200,000 people don't have power.
You've been out and about. You can see there's a lot of trees down. The heavy snow brought down a lot of trees and branches that may not have come down completely during the ice storm that just finished.
Doctors removed a cancerous lesion from President Biden's chest during a physical last month. CBS's Christina Ruffini with CBS News medical contributor Dr. David Agus.
Basal cell carcinomas don't invade, but they classically grow and they can cause local problems, hence the need to remove them.
CBS News medical contributor Dr. David Agus says the president will require regular monitoring for new lesions.
In Ukraine, Russia may be on the verge of its very first victory there in months in the war over a year old. CBS News Brief, Allison Keyes.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes is now online at knuckleheads.shop. Step into your favorite smoke shop without leaving your home. Find grinders, papers, Delta 8, and more, all from your computer or phone. With free shipping on all orders over $50, you'll be sure to find exactly what you like. You can also order for in-store pickup, so there's no wait. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue.
Order online today at knuckleheads.shop.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Next up is my conversation with Chris Collingwood. Great dude. Also shared the green room with me and Portugal the Man. Super fun guy. We had a great conversation about music, the mechanics of music, songwriting, all that sort of stuff. So here is Chris Collingwood.
Which one's your favorite pick?
I don't have a favorite pick. The most important thing for me is that it's brightly colored. So when I drop it on the stage, I can pick it.
Oh, yeah. Do you lose a lot of picks?
Yeah. I used to, not so much anymore. I used to drink a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And then no more on that.
Yeah.
On the pick, are you a heavy or a medium?
Heavy.
Okay.
You guitar player?
I play guitar poorly.
Heavy or light?
You know what? I honestly don't play with a pick. I just kind of finger pick it, or I kind of use my hand. It's a very imprecise kind of thing. Is that typical?
I see that, like Adam from Fountains of Wayne used to do that because he started on piano and bass, which I guess the more serious bass players play with your fingers.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then, you know, the Ramones, of course, play with a pick.
Heavy pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was like the first person that you saw do music and you were like, yeah, you, and that's going to inspire me? Do you remember?
The Beatles, man.
Like, was it the Beatles?
Yeah. I went to an all boys boarding school, and it was so uncool at that school to listen to current music. So at the time it was like Michael Jackson and Madonna and stuff, but I was more into, like the cool kids had album collections, like the Moody Blues and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And like, I guess I owe going to a prep school, like learning about classic rock.
Yeah. That's kind of, which was kind of at the time you did it, the counterculture thing at the boarding school. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, that's cool. What Beatles album's your favorite?
I don't know. That's a trick question.
One? You can't pick one.
How do you do? What's your favorite Beatles
Rubber
album?
Rubber Soul.
Really?
No, I just picked one.
Yeah, that's,
I just figured
that's like
since I asked you that and you said you can't ask that question, you fired it back at me. I figured I should have an answer.
No, that's like Rubber Soul is like a transitional album, I think. They were on their way to Revolver, right?
So yeah, for you, do you hear a song through like melody first, lyrics first? Like what's the driver of the song?
People ask me that a lot, and I wish I had a process.
I thought that not to interrupt
original
you,
question.
That,
yeah,
this sucks.
I'm going to answer it anyway.
All right,
I don't know. I literally have no idea. Like I it's improvisational, and then I get to a point where it starts to feel like something, and then usually like a line, the words and the melody kind of come out at the same time. Maybe it's been brewing underneath. I don't understand how people write words and then set it to music or vice versa. I don't understand how that works. I think if you're going to get like really beautiful, happy accidents, that's not going to happen. It kind of springs forth and you just have to know when you got something.
Like observing, like from comedy perspective, I'll like see something, observe something, like write it down. That's a joke or whatever. Do you do that with like a song too of like you? Okay. Perfect example. The other day I was like, this was an old pizza. Now it's a pizza me.
Is that in your set?
Freaking cool, huh? No. Why? Do you think it'll bomb?
I'm just thinking it could be you can't write songs about pizza. That's just not cool. There's nothing.
But what if it's like, it's kind of like maybe a John Prine thing where it's like kind of funny, but quippy and like kind of throwaway, but you're like, wow, we put that in a freaking song, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. John Prine. He had a way of doing things.
Yeah. Okay. Great interview, Charlie.
Yeah, this is totally my fault. I love John Prine, but I mean, you can also tell that like, the way country writers write a lot, and I wouldn't even call him a country writer, really. He's more like an American folk icon. I don't know what he is. You know, it starts with a title most of the time, and then you build a story around the title. This is something Adam from Fountains of Wayne always wrote that way. Like find a phrase or something that suggests something else, and then play off that and like make a story about it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Pretty much like the difference between the way that Adam and I worked was very similar to the way McCartney and Lennon worked, except better.
Yeah.
Than them.
Yeah. No. Are you not going to elaborate on that? You're just going to say you're better than the Beatles and just direct your role?
This is I'm making this official on your podcast.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
nice. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah,
how have you enjoyed the Midwest so far, Madison?
I love these people. I love this whole scene. I love Butch and just Midwestern nice is a thing, right? It's a real thing.
I think so. I've apologized to these guys a lot being in their green room. Actually, you as well. So sorry also.
Yeah.
Sorry. What's a question that you would like to receive?
I like when a musician interviews me and they talk about pieces in the song, like where did that thing come from?
Oh, you like it when they get
the details.
Yeah.
It's a little harder for me to talk about just.
You like getting in the weeds of it.
I mean, part of the fun of doing like this is seeing these guys and like other acts and like hearing what they're doing and talking about it and learning from other people. And
yeah, I know what like gets me excited about, like, if you write a good joke, or if you write like I do some songwriting too, mostly bad, but if you write it good, it like gives you this energy, you know, that like just keeps you going for the next day or whatever. Like what's kind of that equivalent for you if you have that, you know?
I mean, for me, it's probably more frustration. Like, if I have a really good idea and I know it's a really good idea, and then I sometimes just sit with it forever. I was talking to Freedy about this yesterday. And he just put an album out. It's a great album. And he told me that those songs like started 10 years ago. Like, how do you write a song for 10 years? Like, literally. And then he's like, no, all the albums are like that. Like the one, like the next album will be songs that are also, you know, 10 years old that he started 10 years ago. I don't understand how that works.
It's like the barrel-aged whiskey. You know?
I mean, it's also, I'm just not the same person I was 10 years ago. Like, you grow and you change and you're into different things. Like, 10 years ago was like, you know, if I started a song 10 years ago, I don't think I would be in the right frame of mind to pick it up again now and finish it. Like, it just wouldn't work.
Put a different thing on it with 10 years more of experience or whatever. It wouldn't.
I mean, maybe, or just like, sometimes I just listen to like different kinds of music and I'm into something different. Like, I don't know, like early on, I kind of went in a country music phase, which I kind of think is like boot camp for songwriting. You know, you just learn like the basics and how it's supposed to work. And then, it's good to learn that stuff, and it's good to just develop an instinct for like the way chords go together. And like a lot of musicians don't know the math of music.
Right.
So like we're rehearsing and like we're talking about that too. Like some bands go, okay, we're on the root, that's one. And then they're calling out the chords and they go 4, 5, 6. But like there's different things for different people. I think that if you get too analytical about it, you lose something, because it's like you're thinking about the math too much. And it's also like it's a habit of listening. And there's people who, when they hear a song, like I'm one of them, you can't not hear the chord progression. So like if it's that's the first thing I hear before the words. So I'm just picking, my fingers are unconsciously just doing the guitar chords.
Okay.
So, and that just, I wish I didn't have that analytical part, because if I could shut it off, like I know people who don't know that G to C is the same as A to D. And so every time they play that thing that's the exact same thing but a step up, it sounds totally new to them, because they don't know that it's the same relationship between the two chords, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of question I think I was asking earlier that I keep coming back to, I think it's interesting. It's like, because when I grew up listening to music, I would like listen to Bob Dylan a lot, which kind of, I think, messed up my musicality a little bit, because I was like, I think Bob Dylan's a very lyrically forward-driven person. Those kind of got any kind of does these weird syncopations with the things that sound a little chaotic.
His vocal delivery, you mean?
I mean his vocal delivery, but also like I feel like he was, the way I heard it is the guitar was like second, it was back, so I would go like almost lyrics forward and my rhythm was all, I feel like, messed up because of it, you know. What I mean,
are we talking about you playing a Bob Dylan song?
No, I'm just me trying to write like Bob Dylan. I mean, I don't know, I should not use me as an example, like I say jokes, but you know, but I just think it was interesting how it like ingrained into my brain. But it sounds similar in some ways with what you're saying, of how like the math of it is kind of ingrained in your brain first.
Yeah. And the important point for me about that is I wish I could turn it off, because there are, like I said, there's people that I know that don't know anything about music theory, and every single thing they do surprises them because it sounds different and they realize it's the exact same thing they just did. So it frees you up if your brain is not. And sometimes, like, you're writing and you're thinking about your hands, and that's another thing, like, just trying to work on a song and I'm trying to picture where it's going to go and I cannot stop thinking. I can't turn it off. The subconscious posing of my hands on an invisible fretboard, right? So I'm always thinking of that. And sometimes, like lately, I've just started air drumming while I'm trying to write, just to keep my hands doing something else so that I'm not, so that I don't have to thinking about the guitar while I'm working.
Well, this is super fun. Do you like this interview or not really?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
What are you going to say to them when I leave?
I'm going to say that was the best interview I ever had.
I'm working on it.
All right, huge thanks to Chris for coming on. And finally, next up, although he is a Bears fan, he's still a really great guy. From Rockford, Illinois, here is Miles Nielsen from Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts.
You're in Rockford.
Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah, are you a Bears fan?
I am a Bears
fan. Okay, and that's the end of this interview, ladies and gentlemen. So you've got, like, I feel like you got a very interesting life. What was it like growing up in Rockford, kind of, you know, with everything going on with your family and all that?
Small town, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the grocery store and, like, all of a sudden you're hounded for, I wasn't hounded, but my dad was hounded for autographs. And then they're like, people are like, saw your dad at the store, man. I didn't know he likes to drink Blatz. Like, well, yeah. I mean, he drinks Blatz, so we won't drink his beer. That kind of a thing. You know, he was smart. He was like, well, when I had Rolling Rock, the kids would drink all the Rolling Rock.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I figured I got Blatz. So Blatz would just, they would deter the, you know, us from drinking it. After a while, you get desperate, you'll drink the Blatz.
Yeah.
So we started drinking the Blatz, and then it just backfired. So he just quit drinking altogether. So he's hasn't had drinks for like 27 years because I think we caused him to stop drinking.
You made your dad stop drinking.
That's
you were just cleaning him out.
It was, you know, it was really for him.
What's kind of like your music journey? Like, obviously, you grow up with, you know, your dad being who he is, and that's got to influence you to a degree. But then how do you, like, as an artist, sort of separate yourself, and do you ever, you know?
Well, I think in my youth, I was, like, you know, dead set on, like, I'm going to do it my way. You know, I'm not going to use my dad's name. I'm not going to do this. And then I realized, like, you know, my vision of how easy it was to just get in a tour bus, you know, you just go and you just play for a bunch of people.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wait, you have to write songs and you have to learn how to write songs, craft songs, and then hopefully write songs that someone else other than yourself and your mom are going to like.
Right.
And then you have to figure out how to make those songs into, you know, like, recording is an art in itself. So it's like, you know, just, I was a stubborn kid who, you know, I'm going to prove them, you know, whoever them are, you know, I'm going to prove them wrong. And you're like, well, what does that mean exactly? I don't know. So after a while, my ventures in choir in high school, in the music program, then I went and I was a voice major in college. And then I studied music. And then I studied music in college. And then when I went to another school, I studied the technical side of recording. And I got a degree in recording engineering. And then out of college, I started recording with Steve Albini in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Who he's done, you know, Garbage, Page and Plant, a band called Nirvana.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And that was like such a cool 3-year experience of working with tons of independent artists coming through, record labels coming through. And then throughout that path, I started playing guitar and in a band with my brother Dax, who's here today. And that was about 7 years of touring in that band. And we gained some popularity, you know, like being in Chicago and like selling out the House of Blues and things like that. We're like, we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of, and then we made the record that we wanted to make as a band.
Yeah.
We lost like about 3/4 of our fan base because, you know, we were like, we made the rock record we wanted to make and no one liked it. So we sort of disbanded that. And then I decided, well, I should probably just be the boss of my own thing.
Yeah.
And, so that's what I've been doing for the last like 14 years is Miles Nielsen and Miles Nielsen and the Rusted Hearts.
It's awesome, man.
And
like when you do that though, when you make one, do you really feel like you lost people on it?
Or oh yeah,
does like, that? Because it's kind of like I'm thinking like as a video, you know, I make videos. If you make a bad video, not a lot of people see it because it doesn't get shared as much. I mean, so bad news, it doesn't get a lot of views. But the good news is, it didn't get a lot of views, you know? But with music, it's something different because you spend so much time crafting an album. And then, so it that can happen,
I guess. The problem was, I think it was expectation.
I see.
So, like, our fans had this expectation of the record we were going to make. And then we made the record that we wanted to make. And they were like, well, we were expecting different. So
I see.
We're going to go follow someone else now.
isn't that goofy how that kind of thing works, you know? It's not, I don't know.
But,
I guess,
you know, in hindsight, like listening back to the catalog of that band, you know, we put out 3 albums in a 7-year span. And my favorite one is the one that we wanted to make for ourselves.
Yeah.
So the one that we still, you know, if we get together and play, that's the majority of what we're playing are the songs off that album. So it's like, you know, I mean, in the long run, it's like, well, you have to do what you like, because eventually, like, no one's going to end up liking you, and you're going to fade away, and or maybe not. You could be, you know, you two and stand the test of time, or you know, all these other legacy bands, and some of them still lean on their old songs, and some of them continue to grow, you know. So I'm always impressed by, like, a guy like Tom Waits, who's like, his career is like, or Tom Petty, like, you wrote great songs the whole time, not just like, oh, your first 3 records were amazing. You know, so I don't know. For us, it's just like we're just Midwestern guys who like to work hard.
Yeah, and you kind of get that sense too. I mean, and you're still based in Rockford.
Still based in Rockford. Yeah.
And have you always been based there? Or did you go around for a little
bit? I've traveled around a bit. I traveled out to L.A., down into Florida, Central Illinois for a little bit.
So, and why did you decide to bring it back home?
It's a good question. I think children.
Yeah, they'll do that.
Now, as a comedian, though, like, you know, do you feel like, for instance, in this situation that we're in with all these different artists and people, do you feel like you're constantly needing to be funny?
No, I don't. Yeah. And
that's nice.
Yeah, because I do my stand up stuff, and that's up there, and that's funny. And I do like the videos, and those are funny. But when those are off, then, you know. Then I, you know, mentally.
What is your mental disengage? How do you do that?
I do like some meditation and all that stuff. I just try and exist though, you know. And I don't like.
Is there a hobby that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I like biking. I like fishing, and I like bird watching.
Nice,
all great things.
Yeah. All great, and also like great things in Wisconsin today.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm a big outdoors fella. I just got to do it more. You know? Yeah, you just gotta.
That's how I feel. I'm a basketball junkie. So,
oh, nice!
I'm the second oldest guy in the league.
Okay.
So, like,
what's your position?
I'm shooting guard.
Nice.
I'm like the out of the 10 guys, I'm usually the 8th guy off the bench. You know, I'm like number 8. Like, you know, I'm not starting, but you know, like if you need me to come down and knock down a couple long distance shots,
you'll make it happen.
Because I ruptured my Achilles like 8 years ago.
Oh, shoot.
Playing basketball, and like my whole game was like, before that was like a slasher and a get to the hoop, and now I'm like, I'm good. I'm gonna hang out here. If I'm open, hit me.
Everyone's got their time.
Do you get to Bucks games much?
I love the Bucks. Yeah. Are you a Bulls fan?
I'm a Bulls fan, but I enjoy basketball, you know.
Yeah.
I enjoy the Bucks.
Bucks are great.
I feel like, is it Olnhauser? I don't know how you say his name, the coach.
Yeah, you did pretty good.
It's Wisconsin, but like he fits that team so well.
Oh my
God. Just the look and everything. I'm like, that guy would be sitting at Jim's County Line on Highway 26, like having a Stroh's, you know, or having a Miller High Life, you know, like any given Saturday.
Yeah.
You know?
That's hilarious. Yeah. I that's a great observation about him.
I love the Wisconsin look of him.
Yeah. You know, and I like kind of just Milwaukee, Rockford as well, Chicago. I mean, Chicago's kind of the higher class situation there in a lot of ways. But, you know, kind of these blue-collar towns are... There's something cool that comes out of that from an artistic standpoint, I think.
It's like Milwaukee is a place for me that, rather than going to Chicago, like my wife and I will seek out things in Milwaukee over, and we'll head to Milwaukee.
Yeah,
you know, like it's rare that we go to Chicago for things because it's like Milwaukee's a lot easier.
Yeah, I know.
But also, like, just I feel like there's a little like there's like more of this like honest grit to Milwaukee.
Totally. Yeah.
That I love that, like, we just, you know, it's like I'll get on Hotwire and find these, like, and Milwaukee's got a lot of hotels.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll go up there and just stay for a night or two and just, you know, you can go to the Riverside or the Paps and catch something cool. You can go to a Bucks game.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's hockey there. Like, there's tons of cool stuff.
Great parking, too, as you said.
Great parking.
You know, that should be our take on Milwaukee. Yeah. You can find parking.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's great.
Should not
be
overlooked.
It's great parking. Yeah. I didn't think about that much, but every time in Milwaukee.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.